Illusions, The Adventures of a Reluctant Messiah, Chapter 2, Part 2. A modern new pickup truck hushed down the road towards us, raising a thin brown fog of dust. It stopped by the field. The door opened, an old man got out, and a girl of 10 or so. The dust stayed in the air, it was that still. "Selling rides, are you?" said the man. The field was Donald Shimoda's discovery. I stayed quiet. "Yes, sir," he said brightly. "Feel like flying, do you, today?" "If I did, you cut any didos, turn any flip-flops with me up there?" The man's eyes twinkled, watching to see if we knew him behind his country bumpkin talk. "Will if you want. Won't if you don't." "And you want the dear Lord's fortune, I suppose," the man said. "$3 cash, sir, for 9 10-minutes in the air. That's 33 1/3 cents per minute, and worth it, most people tell me." It was an odd bystander feeling to sit there idle and listen to the way this fellow worked his trade. I liked what he said, all low-key. I'd grown so used to my own way of selling rides. "Guaranteed 10 degrees cooler upstairs, folks. Come on up where only the birds and angels fly. All of this for $3 only, a dozen quarters from your purse or pocket." I'd forgotten there might be another way. There's a tension, flying and selling rides alone. I was used to it, but still it was there. If I don't fly passengers, I don't eat. Now when I could sit back, not depending for my dinner on the outcome, I relaxed for once and watched. The girl stood back and watched too. Blonde, brown-eyed, solemn-faced, she was there because her grandpa was. She didn't want to fly. Most often it's the other way around, eager kids and cautious elders. But one gets a sense for these things when it's one's livelihood, and I knew that girl wouldn't fly with us if we waited all summer. "Which one of you gentlemen," the man said. Shimoda poured himself a cup of water. "Richard will fly you. I'm still on my lunch hour, unless you want to wait." "No, sir, I'm ready to go. Can we fly over my farm?" "Sure," I said. "Just point the way you want to go, sir." I dumped my bedroll and tool bag and cook pots from the front cockpit of the fleet, helped the man into the passenger seat, and buckled him in. Then I slid down into the rear cockpit and fastened my own seat belt. "Give me a prop, will you, Don?" "Yep." He brought his water cup with him and stood by the propeller. "What do you want?" "Hot and brakes. Pull it slow. The impulse will take it right out of your hand." Always when somebody pulls the fleet propeller, they pull it too fast, and for complicated reasons, the engine won't start. But this man pulled it around ever so slowly, as though he'd done it forever. The impulse spring snapped, sparks fired in the cylinders, and the old engine was running. That easy. He walked back to his airplane, sat down, and began talking to the girl. In a great burst of raw horsepower and flying straw, the fleet was in the air, climbing through 100 feet. If the engine quits now, we land in the corn. 500 feet. Now, and we can turn back and land in the hay. Now, and it's the cow pasture west. 800 feet and level, following the man's finger pointing through the wind southwest. 3 minutes airborne, and we circle the farmstead, barns the color of glowing coals, house of ivory in a sea of mint, a garden in back for food, sweet corn and lettuce and tomatoes growing. The man in the front cockpit looked down through the air as we circled the farmhouse, framed between the wings and through the flying wires of the fleet. A woman appeared on the porch below, white apron over blue dress, waving. The man waved back. They would talk later of how they could see each other so well across the sky. He looked back at me finally with a nod to say that was enough, thanks, and we could go back now. I flew a wide circle around Ferris to let the people know there was flying going on, and spiraled down over the hayfield to show them just where it was happening. As I slipped down to land, banked steeply over the corn, the travel air swept off the ground and turned at once toward the farm we'd just left. I flew once with a five-chip circus, and for a moment it was that kind of busy feeling, one plane lifting off with passengers while another lands. We touched the ground with a gentle rumbling crash and rolled to the far end of the hay by the road. The engine stopped, the man unsnapped his safety belt, and I helped him out. He took a wallet from his overalls and counted the dollar bills, shaking his head. That's quite a ride, son. We think so. It's a good product we're selling. It's your friend that's selling. Oh? I'll say. Your friend could sell ashes to the devil, I'll wager, can't he now? What makes you say that? The girl, of course. An airplane ride to my granddaughter, Sarah? As he spoke, he watched the travel air, a distant silver note in the air, circling the farmhouse. He spoke as a calm man speaks, noting the dead twig in the yard has just sprouted blossoms and ripe apples. Since she's born, that girl's been wild to death about high places. Screams. Just terrified. Sarah'd no more climb a tree than she'd stir a hornet's nest bare hand. Won't climb the ladder to the loft. Won't go up there if the flood was rising in the yard. The girl's a wonder with machines, not too bad around animals, but heights? They're a caution to her. And there she is, up in the air. He talked on about this and other special times. He remembered when the barnstormers used to come through Galesburg years ago, and Monmouth, flying two wingers the same as we flew, but doing all kinds of crazy stunts with them. I watched the distant traveler get bigger, spiral down over the field in a bank steeper than I'd ever fly with a girl afraid of heights, slip over the corn and the fence, and touch the hay in a three-point landing that was dazzling to watch. Donald Shimoda must have been flying for a good long while to land a traveler that way. End of chapter 2, part 2.